Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Super Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And we'll start with a little bit of flavor from Northern Virginia, where both Jim and I live. We both voted earlier today. Jim, I was down in Prince William County. Very weak turnout. My wife and I went, and there was no wait. There was one person who was voting ahead of us that we saw, and there were a couple people that trickled in behind us. I voted probably about a quarter after nine, and I saw when I slipped the ballot through the scanner that I was the 231st vote at that particular polling location. And I would say that in 2012, on general election day, I probably waited for at least 90 minutes, maybe closer to 2 hours. So you can tell who's showing up to vote in primaries and who's not. When I arrived at the polling place, usually is a pretty active situation of people handing out literature and a whole cluster of yard signs. Nobody handing out literature. One guy that was standing out there trying to get a petition signed to get somebody on the ballot for later this year. The only yard signs out there, not Trump, not Cruz, not Rubio, not Carson, John Kasich.
What?
Go figure. So I went into the polling place. It was they hand you the ballot. You fill in the rectangle, and then you did it through the scanner with great respect to some of the other candidates on the ballot. I decided we needed more Canadian superheroes and decided to give the nod to Ted Cruz, who will probably not do very well in Virginia, but I could certainly exit with a clean conscience, and I know you did too. Although you did vote for who I did.
Greg, I can respect that decision as I laid out in today's Morning Jolt. I really don't want to see Ted Cruz in the White House. I want to see Ted Cruz on the Supreme Court.
There you go.
I don't want him protecting our rights for 4 to 8 years. I want him protecting our rights for 40 years. I also think that's where his skill set went, but I can respect that decision. Being the rhino establishment sellout that I am, I voted for Marco Rubio. I'm the kind of rhino sellout who likes the guy with a 98% ACU rating. Similar story here in Authenticity Woods in Fairfax County. My wife went to vote at 9. She said turnout was not very high, no lines. And she went at 8 o'clock. I went at 9 o'clock, and no real lines there either. Intermittently, people coming and going, but not a big high turnout. I think Fairfax County is in the neighborhood of being a 50-50 county, slight Democrat edge. I noticed this as I thought about it. I saw one house, a very big fancy house, by the way, that has Sanders signs out front. So I guess he's calling for the Bolshevik revolution against himself, that donor. It's strangely quiet. I don't know if this means that the Democrats have decided their primary's over and they're not going to bother. They don't feel particularly invested in Hillary versus Sanders. Or maybe everybody's voting after work, and maybe that'll be the case. But not the huge turnout. Again, you might not expect huge turnout, but this has been a very well-covered, very intensely fought primary. And last, you know, Greg, you probably remember last primary, we only had Romney and Ron Paul on the yeah, ballot because yes, they're the only ones who turned in their signatures on time. We have a real choice this time. I saw everybody's name on there except Bobby Jindal. And if his name had been there, I would have been very tempted to fill it in, even though he's out. It doesn't seem like turnout is very high here in Virginia. You think a place would be very politically attuned. So, you know, we'll see how things shake out tonight. But it seems like, you know, for whatever reason, Northern Virginia is just not all that excited about what seems like a very consequential election.
Yeah, very interesting. It'll be interesting to see, and I don't know that there's any way to quantify this, but they did a random drawing to see where the names would line up on the ballot. And Rubio got the top spot. I think most people probably know who they're going to vote for. But I think that's a pretty good spot when there's a big jumble of well over a dozen names on there, since a lot of people that dropped out are still on the ballot, your Carly Fiorina's, Chris Christie's, and so forth. So we'll see if that helps him a little bit. It's much easier to see his name than some of the other names in there. So that could be a little bit of a boost for Rubio. But Jim, it's really important, given the small, tiny, slow trickle of people that were at these various polling places, that we canceled school today, huh?
Look, the kids have been in school for like days and days. So, you know, it's been like a week since we've had a closing for frost. So.
And it is 65 and sunny today, so we really couldn't have expected them to go anyways.
There you go.
All right, on to the actual martinis today. Let's go to the good martini. And, of course, you got a lot of people in different states coming out and endorsing different candidates, sometimes saying who they're absolutely not going to vote for, like Ben Sasse saying he would never vote for Trump. Adam Carolla, courtesy of Prager University, not saying who to vote for, but explaining in general, not which candidate, but in general, who not to vote for in an election. It's a very funny, but also very impactful 4.5-minute video. Here's a little bit of an excerpt from it.
Don't vote for anyone who says, I'll fight for you.
because that person is full of crap and has no intention of not only fighting for you, he doesn't know who you are. He or she's just moving on to the next town where they can point at the next sap and say, I'll fight for you. So tired of these politicians and their town hall meetings when somebody stands up and says, I'm pregnant with quadruplets. I've been put on academic probation at the junior college, and my milkman hates my guts. What are you going to do for me? And my answer is nothing. But here's the good news. We live in the United States. You can do something for you. Feel free to get a job and fight to keep it.
Jim, then he went on to talk about how people who are at home during the day now, it's a much different situation than when we were kids. When we were kids and stayed home, there were ads for truck driving schools and how to fix typewriters and all sorts of other things to help people get a job because they assume people who are home on a weekday in the middle of the day wanted work. And now you have slip and fall lawyer ads for people who want to make a quick million or $2 rather than going to find work. So across the board, very funny, but also making an important point.
The day of the Garrity dictatorship is the day that that message will be broadcast on giant Orwellian screens, telling people that now that I've taken over, don't expect me to do anything for you. You are not supposed to be dependent. I made the point in the Jolt today that, look, I'm voting for Rubio, but I see his flaws. If you're wary about him, I understand it. If you're upset about Gang of Eight, you got every reason to be. If you think he's not experienced enough, I can see where you're coming from. None of these guys are perfect. None of these guys are owed your vote. They have to earn it. And if you look at it and you say, I just can't pull the lever for that guy, fine. The point is, we are hiring a contractor. We're offering them a four-year contract, and if they do a good job, we'll get a four-year extension for that contract. And that's it. You don't get to stay in. We're not looking for a prince. We're not looking for a messiah. You're just looking for somebody to take care, as he lays out in that video, that take care of the jobs that I can't take care of myself, i.e. ISIS, right? Or if the Ebola virus comes over here, or the Zika virus, or something like that. Deal with the problems I can't deal with myself. That's the only proper role for government, protecting my rights. And I wish more people listened to Adam Carolla, which is not something I would have expected to have said back during the Man Show years.
Yeah, probably not. But he's making an excellent point, and it's definitely a culture that has come with its hand out. And I think if you were to ask Rush Limbaugh and some other people, it kind of goes back to Ponytail Guy from the town hall debate between Bush, Clinton, and Perot back. What are you going to do for us? Think of us as your children. How are you going to take care of us? And unfortunately, it's only snowballed from there rather than that guy getting smacked down and being reminded that that's not how this country is supposed to work.
Our next candidate is going to be cupcakes. I will put a cupcake in every American's mouth for that. You know, used to be chicken in every pot. Now we're going to get... Now we'll probably get something, you know, low fat or something like that. But
all right, on to the bad martini now. And Jim, this is directly taken from a story that you wrote for the National Review Online, and it basically goes to the thesis that right now in presidential politics, thanks largely to Donald Trump, but also thanks to the appetite of the consumer and certainly the fascination of the media, what it takes to get noticed right now in the presidential campaign trail is basically a larger-than-life personality and a penchant for insulting people. I mean, for weeks and weeks and months, Trump dominated the news, and he still does. Marco Rubio's gotten a lot more attention in the last few days, but largely it's because he's making insulting comments about Donald Trump. When they actually get to the meat of his speech, they don't cover that part. They only cover the part where he talks about Donald Trump having a bad fake tan or having small hands or potentially wetting his pants at the debate. I mean, we're basically getting back to the junior high level of politics here. And anybody who wants to make a serious point just doesn't get the interest of the media, and therefore the people aren't hearing the message.
Yeah, I wrote about this yesterday, and a lot of people interpreted it as criticism of Marco Rubio for going this route. And I'd say, look, I understand why he's doing it. It's working, right? He is only playing by the rules that Donald Trump helped set, and that the cable news networks have said, and basically the broader, larger media has said, by saying that, look, if you say something that is sneering and obnoxious and, oh my God, I can't believe you said that, that gets the headlines. That puts you front and center. And I believe it's the Media Research Center put together something who basically said that, like, there were like 700 minutes of coverage for Donald Trump in 1 month on the nightly news and like 9 seconds for like the Bobby Jindals of the world. The saturation coverage of Trump has basically turned it into a referendum on Trump, right? I mean, people, you ask people about the Republican presidential race, they think of Trump because he's been covered so relentlessly. And it's not been for his detailed policy proposals. He put out an immigration proposal, a tax proposal, and then he kind of stopped. We really haven't gotten anything on health care. He hasn't named his foreign policy advisors. As we all know, he hasn't put out his tax returns. He just goes out with these stream of consciousness rambling remarks. And because they're funny enough, and because they're obnoxious enough, and because they're shocking enough, that's what the media has decided this election is going to be about. Now, Rubio's making his tactic, and it's working at least well enough for him for so far. My fear, Greg, is that they've set a new template, and that we're going to see everybody in the 2018 midterms and in the 2020 presidential race coming out and doing the exact same thing. They're all going to have the same style. Everybody's going to be sneering at each other. Everybody's going to be trying to shock value. And it's going to become an insufferable torrent of noise. Could we have like some venues for people who don't care about the issues and those of us who do, we have candidates bothering to deal with that? And the television media have decided, no, it's got to be insults all the time. And it's not healthy for our democracy, and I just don't know how we put the genie back in the bottle now.
So basically, Howard Stern ran for governor of New York 20 years too soon.
Well, you know, there's Jesse Ventura.
That's true. He got
right? We're going to see celebrities, and you know.
But Trump does have a health care plan. He's, you know, he's going to get rid of the lines.
The lines around the states. You know, we'll just be one big state, United State of Trump America.
Speaking of Trump plans, let's move to the crazy martini now. He was on for the full hour with Sean Hannity last night on the Fox News Channel. And Hannity brought up the New York Times, which apparently had an off-the-record session with Donald Trump back in January, which then led to a Trump tangent about bashing the dying New York Times. But then Hannity finally steered the conversation back around to the allegation that some of the New York Times are saying that Trump said his plans were very flexible on immigration, not the hard line that he's been portraying himself as throughout this campaign. Here's how a bit of that conversation went.
We had a board meeting. It was off the record. All of a sudden, they leak. It's all over the place.
They said, oh, it's negotiable on the wall.
Everything. By the way, it is negotiable. Things are negotiable. I'll be honest with you. You know, I'll make the wall 2 feet shorter or something. I mean, everything's negotiable.
It's not negotiable about building it.
Building it, not negotiable.
It's not negotiable about, would it be negotiable about the 11 million? Maybe let some people stay if they register in a period of time?
I would say this. Look, I've always said, we have some good people over here, and they're going to go out. But we will work out some system that's fair, but we either have a country or we don't.
Everything's negotiable, Jim. Really sticking to principle on his core issue there.
Would not be the least bit surprising if Donald Trump, the ultimate negotiator, the ultimate deal maker, ended up making giant concessions on what was the signature issue of his campaign so far. And as a part of me would say, the Trump fans, you deserve this. You deserve to look at this guy's record. You deserve to look at the way he's wiggled out of contracts, the way he breaks his word, the way he breaks his commitments. I'm sure Ivana could tell you a lot about Trump's ability to keep his promises. it is a long and sordid history, and yet people are putting blind faith into this guy. Now, your New York Times interview with Trump, the rumor is around that he certainly indicated that this is an opening bid and he's willing to make a lot of concessions on this, and you saw the answer to Hannity right there. It's a leap of faith, and I think that the Trump fans are that cliff is a heck of a lot further away than they think it is. But good luck. Good luck arguing with gravity right there.
Jim, rest up. It's going to be a long night, potentially a depressing night, and you're actually headed to CPAC for the next few days, so we'll see you back on Monday.
I am. The good news is everybody will be one big happy family at CPAC.
Oh, yes.
everybody will be in a good mood. Everybody will be cheery, embracing, singing kumbaya. Yeah, so I'll see you there. I'll be the one in riot gear.
Yeah, you'll have the Trump people calling everybody else losers, and every other campaign's fans will go, no, your guy drop out. No, your guy has to drop out. It'll be fun.
Yeah. You know that prisoner's dilemma description? That's Cruz and Rubio right now. Okay, you first. You drop out first. You drop out first. Somebody said to me earlier, well, what we need to see right now, the way they put it to me was, if Marco Rubio or Ted Cruz don't see that the Republican Party, the conservative movement, and the future of the country is bigger than themselves, then we're doomed. So I said, so we're doomed is what you're saying.
Jim, enjoy. I'll talk to you Monday.
See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. There will still be 3 Martini Lunch podcasts the rest of the week, though, so please join us again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.